time for Football Friday with Bill Savage. Presented by Boyd's Royal Knight on Government Boulevard in Mobile. Featuring $8 weekday lunch specials, analysis, and insights. The winners, the losers. Get ready for the weekend with Football Friday on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and another Football Friday when we check in with our buddy Phil Savage, general manager of the AAF Alliance, Arizona Hotshots, which are getting ready to start playing here in a month. Also, analyst extraordinaire for all things football, be that pro, be that college, high school, Pop Warner. They got the kids in the backyard. He can analyze that. Also host, of course, of his podcast, Football Philosophy, and the author of Fourth and Goal Every Day. And a man who, when he tweets, I listen, especially during an Alabama football game, our buddy Phil Savage. Hey, man.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. I know it's another Football Friday. It was a Black Monday, though, this past week in the national title game, and I guess we can start there, but, you know, we talked last Friday, the two position units for Bama that I thought were pivotal would be the play of the offensive line against the Clemson defensive front, and then the Bama secondary against the talented wide receiver core of Clemson. And in reality, it was painfully obvious that Bama really struggled to cover those gifted wide receivers, Justin Ross and, of course, T. Higgins. They both made some sensational plays. And Bama ran the football at times between the 20s, but for whatever reason, they felt compelled to do other things down in the red zone. We knew Clemson's defense was fairly stingy down in that part of the field, but that really proved to be the difference. And then you factor in the special team snafus, the missed extra point, the kick out of bounds, and of course everybody's talked about the ill-fated fake field goal attempt. It was a performance that we've never seen in 12 years under Nick Saban. There's certainly been some losses along the way during this decade of dominance, but never seen the team come unraveled, unglued like that in the 12 years that Coach Saban's been there.
I heard somebody, this is true, I think the biggest margin for a Bama loss in Saban's history.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The largest margin was 14 points. That had happened a couple of times. The Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma, the South Carolina game in 2010. And that was always the game I pointed back to. It said, you know, Bama just, you know, they got beat on offense, defense, special teams. South Carolina was the better team that day. All the other defeats, though, that Bama's had, typically there's been a play or two, or two or three, that if it goes the other way, Bama could have conceivably won the game. That was not the case on Monday night, especially when we got into the second half. But, you know, a lot of things led to it. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's different about the playoff than the BCS system or the old-fashioned bowl system is that, you know, you get that month off and you get ready to go and you play and win that game. And then that was it. Now you have to turn around a week later and go play another quality opponent. And I don't know if the West Coast travel, but Clemson had to go a long way as well. But the bottom line is Bama didn't have as much energy. They didn't seem as into it against Clemson, especially after that first quarter and a half, as they did against Oklahoma in previous games. And you know, I think that was a factor for whatever reason that just that turnaround, that additional game, seemed to impact Alabama more so than Clemson.
Phil, the quarterback for Alabama, Tua Tagovailoa, started the game on a wrong note pretty much with that interception returned for a touchdown only 100 seconds into the game. You know, he did respond that next drive with a perfect touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy, but he really didn't look like the Tua we've seen this season in last year's national championship game for the rest of the entire night. What was the difference for Tua on Monday night, and what was Venables doing differently for Clemson's defense that had their defense looking the way it did?
You know, from an overall standpoint, Dalton, I think that, you know, Tua was unbelievable the first half of the year. Then he had the knee. Then he had the ankle down the stretch. Of course, he had 4 weeks of rehab and practice leading into Oklahoma and against a very porous defense. He goes 24 for 27, and all things seem right in the Alabama world. Again, the turnaround and the fact that you're playing an elevated level of ability in terms of Clemson's defense, the fact that Clemson was able to generate some pressure, although, you know, they did get to him a couple times. They did make him move. And despite the fact that he came back and threw that beautiful rainbow to Jerry Jeudy, I do think that that first pick six, it shook Bama a bit. And what I mean by that is that typically by the first 15, 20 minutes of a football game that Bama's in, it's stabilized and it's going along the script that they want. I never got the sense Monday night that the game stabilized for Alabama, that they ever really got a grip on it. And part of that was because of that opening drive pick six. And then part of it, too, was the fact that, you know, when Bama, during the year, they got mesmerized a bit with all the passing and the success they were having with the RPOs. And look, it was devastatingly productive. But in the biggest of moments against the better opponent, they did need to lean more on their run game. And the other night, they did it between the 20s, but when they got down inside that red zone, they opted to move away from it. And I think it was just hard for this particular team to go back to what had worked for 11 years because they were so sold on the fact that they could throw it and catch it as good as anybody in the country. And look, it worked for 14 games, but you live by the past, you die by the past. And I think in this situation, you know, this was a game where Bama needed to control the clock and control the pacing of the game a little bit more instead of being in a track meet sort of contest with Clemson. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see with Mike Locksley moving on now as the head coach of Maryland, and apparently Dan Enos, the quarterback coach, will be moved up into the play-calling role. What kind of adjustments they make? Because, oh, look, all their skill talent from a throwing and catching standpoint is back for next year. So I still anticipate them to do a lot of the same, but at the same time, I do think that they'll put an emphasis, sort of refocus their attention on this run game led by Najee Harris next year.
You mentioned earlier that missed extra point from Joseph Bulovas after that second touchdown. Do you think that affected Nick Saban's decision-making the rest of the game?
You know, I think that's another element that contributed to just the shakiness of it all. You look up at the scoreboard, it's 14-13. You're like, well, you know the game's not going to end here. It's going to keep going, and we're going to have to make up for that lost point at some point during this contest. And, you know, I do think that played a role, certainly in the decision to fake the field goal when it was 4th and 6 and they were down in that part of the field. But, you know, it was an Achilles heel that didn't impact the season much during the year because they were blowing everybody out. But on the biggest of stages, the missed extra point, and then the kick out of bounds was huge because that ball goes all the way out, you know, to positive field position for Clemson. They scored after that kick out of bounds. And then, you know, some of those things clearly led to the decision to fake that field goal, which I think when that went the other way, that's when a lot of people just felt like, you know, it's not going to be Bama's night.
Hey, teach me something here. Somebody with your wisdom and acumen in the game, you said something on Twitter during the game. I remember seeing this as stark as now as I saw it on Monday. Explain this to somebody like me. You said, with Clemson up, this is on Twitter during the game, with Clemson up 28-16 and now within 5 minutes of the half, this is where Alabama football historically dominates the action and gets back into the game or extends a lead in most cases. Most critical phase of this entire game is the last 5 minutes of the first half and the first five of the second half. Is that true to that game, or you're saying true to every game? And why is it that those 10 minutes of football, why do you watch those? I mean, you're spot on. You called it right then, but why? Teach me.
Well, the situational football that Bama plays, typically they defer when they win the toss, right? So they defer. They're going to get the ball first in the second half. And so oftentimes, Sean, when they've had a lead or they're trying to hang into a game, something positive happens for them. They make something positive happen going into the half and then coming out of the half. And so it's 28-16. If they go down and score and make it 28-23 and then get the ball back first in the second half and go down and score again, they could conceivably come back and take the lead against Clemson. And so I felt like that if Clemson withstood that situational context, those Middleton minutes, and I'm telling you, I don't have the numbers, but I bet in the 12 years that Nick Saban's been the head coach, I bet it's 500 to 20 in terms of that portion of the game. I mean, we've seen it happen a zillion times. A team sort of hanging around with Alabama, boom, they turn the ball over, Bama scores, then the Tide gets the ball to open the second half, they score again, now you're down three touchdowns and the football game is over. And Clemson won that portion of the game 3-0. They got the stop at the end of the half, and they turned it around and kicked a field goal themselves. Then Bama sat on the ball with 30 seconds left and three timeouts. And then the second half opened, Bama drives it. They get down into scoring territory, come up feathers. And when that happened, it's like, wow, Clemson withstood that phase of this. It's going to be awfully tough for Bama to come back, because that's always the momentum changer for the Crimson Tide.
Well, we can't let you go without talking about those two outstanding true freshmen for Clemson's offense. Trevor Lawrence had 347 yards passing and three touchdowns. And that freshman wide receiver from Phoenix City, Justin Ross.
Those two are off the hook, man. There.
Six catches, 153 yards, and that back-breaking touchdown. Talk about the play of those two young guys and how much better you think they could be for the rest of their career at Clemson.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he stands, you know, 6'6". He's listed. He's probably 6'5 and change. But as I mentioned to you guys last week, he can throw the ball to all parts of the field with no strain. I mean, you never see him just really try to drive the ball. It just comes so naturally to him. And after the opening three and out, from that point on, he was really spot on. You know, the injury to Christian Miller really impacted Alabama because they had no pressure from the edges. And the fact is, the ball was coming out quickly anyway. And the problem for Bama is they could not pressure because they did not believe in their corners to be able to hang with Higgins and Ross. And, I mean, you could see why. I mean, these guys are 6'5", 6'4", 210 pounds. They're like basketball power forwards going up for a rebound down the field. And so Lawrence put on quite a show. He's got 2 years of eligibility or required eligibility before he could go pro. But I've seen some people say that he'd be the first pick in this draft. I mean, he certainly appears to be, you know, a future NFL quarterback. And this was one of those rare occasions where conceivably with Tua coming back next year and perhaps being the number one choice or top five or top 10 next year, I mean, you had two top-shelf quarterbacks that were not eligible for this next draft going head-to-head, and Trevor Lawrence won this matchup. We'll see if Alabama can respond for next year.
And one last thing, Phil. We're in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. Big game coming up on Sunday for the New Orleans Saints, and they're welcoming the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles into the Superdome. It should be rocking. How are you feeling about the Saints' chances on Sunday?
Yeah, I would say I feel pretty good about the Saints. They're at home. It's one of the noisiest stadiums in the league when things are going well for the Saints. I think they used the bye week to a real advantage for them with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. The fact that they've been in the playoffs before, they've now had a week off. The Eagles are a team that's a bit on a roll now with Nick Foles taking over for Carson Wentz. They think they can repeat the same script from last year, go on a big run and end up in the Super Bowl. But I kind of feel like that this will be the end of the road for Philadelphia, because this probably turns into a scoring contest, and the Saints are prolific offensively. I think New Orleans wins this game and gets a date to host the NFC Championship there in the Superdome.
Wow. Let's talk what happens after the Super Bowl, and that is the start of the AAF Alliance season. Talk about that with us.
Yeah, we're in San Antonio right now. All eight teams are out here. We've had five practices so far. And I have to tell you guys, it's exceeded my expectations in terms of the hotel, our training table, the practices, the ability level of the players has been better than I've had in my mind's eye. And we're going to complete the weekend. We stay here until January 31st, and then the weekend after the Super Bowl, as you mentioned, Sean, the Alliance tees it up on February the 9th, and then our team, the Hotshots, we host the Salt Lake Stallions on February the 10th. CBS Sports Network, and they will have an Alliance app for people to view every single game that takes place during the season.
This is nice, because those of you that have been fearing what happens after the Super Bowl and football will be over, no need to fear. You got more football on the way. So that is great news, Phil. I think there could be a lot of smiles out there when that's on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And look, our head coach, Rick Neuheisel, he's having a blast being on the field with these players. They're into it. They want that second or third, or in some cases, a first chance to prove that they belong and deserve another opportunity in the National Football League. So we're having fun with it. It's been quite a journey trying to put all this together, but we have 75 players right now. We've dropped down to 52 by the time the regular season opens, and there's been a lot of enthusiasm here, so we've been very pleased with the way it's going so far.
And Phil, before we wrap up, I remind folks too, if they have not for some reason gotten their copy of Fourth and Goal Every Day, how do they do it?
Well, you can go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Books A Million. All those outlets online would have the book. And I tell you, it's actually apropos based on what happened Monday night, because after today, when those juniors and underclassmen declare for the draft, the 2019 season begins, and Bama will put what happened Monday night in the rear view much faster than the media and the fans will. And because it's Fourth and Goal Every Day, starting tonight with recruiting and tomorrow with recruiting, and then on into getting ready for spring football.
As always, I appreciate the update, even when it had to come with some bad news on the autopsy on Monday night's game. But your insight's always so very important, and I can't wait to talk some more football and pro football next week with you.
Guys, we'll keep it going, and I'll check in with you from San Antonio again next Friday.
Phil Savage, Football Friday, brought to you by Boyd's Royal Knight. I mean, when y'all go back and look, I retweeted those tweets there during the game. I mean, he called it right. I was like, how does he know this before it happens? Well, probably because he's been doing it for a long time.
On Twitter, at Phil Savage, a great resource for your football watching.
Absolutely. Coming right back, more of Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Right, 828 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Glad you're here. Phone number is 343-0106. 343-0106. Another great event coming up at Cottage Hill Package. Shouldn't be a surprise, because that's what they do. But they got this event coming up a week from yesterday, so less than a week away. They do these tasting events. So Cottage Hill Package, cool in the front. I mean, big, big store. They got the huge humidor, big selection of spirits and wines and, yeah, my favorite, the craft beer. And they got those crowlers to go that are fantastic.
Perfect.
But they also, in the back, have a lounge. And they open this up, I say after hours, but they're still open, so just later in their day. And they have specialty events, whether it's cigar events go on, or maybe a wine tasting go on, craft beer tasting. And this one coming up a week from yesterday, the Big Magilla, the granddaddy, the grandmama of the craft beer world, Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, coming to town with beers for us to taste. They didn't put it in their note to me, but quite often they bring swag.
Yeah, like, always.
If you got the cooler, you know the cooler where you put the stickers on, because you're old enough now you don't put the stickers on your car as much, but you put them on your cooler, because that's a... Right. You're laughing because I'm right. You put them on your cooler. Well, they have those these beer manufacturers or wine. They come in and they have the stickers and hats and all that kind of stuff. So Sierra Nevada, big, big microbrew, sounds oxymoronic. They're coming in, and that event starts at 6 in the lounge in the back of Cottage Hill Package. It's free. You sample the beer. You get a chance to taste some of the beers maybe you haven't had before from this company. And then, lucky for you, you got a chance to pick up a 6-pack while you're there.
Yeah, you know, we just got done talking to Phil, his book, Fourth and Goal Every Day. I think that Cottage Hill Package should put out their own book, Beer 30,
every day. every day. So make it every day. Listen, the event's coming up on Thursday with Sierra Nevada at 6 p.m., but you can go down. I would suggest you go by beforehand, check out the great selection of craft beer, wine, spirits, and the cigar selection. Even to a person who is uninformed about cigars like I am, I know that it's pretty robust, the selection of cigars, enough that they have their own tobacconist. In other words, a guide to take you through the humidor and show you what's good and what you might be getting for a gift or for yourself. Check them out. Cottage Hill and Hillcrest online, cottagehillpackage.com. Make sure to like them on Facebook, and we'll see you out there for the Sierra Nevada event coming up on this coming Thursday. Dr. Bill's got our forecast. Also, we'll check in with national news from Westwood One, and then we talk to you, 343-0106.
Thank you, Kane. 835 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings on a Friday. Right now, we head over to McConnell Automotive, where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, Dalton. How's everything going your way?
Everything's going great here, but not as great as it's going at McConnell Automotive, because I'm hearing the closeout end-of-year sale has been extended through January.
Yeah, Dalton, we're excited about it, and a lot of people, they kind of missed out at the end of the year with the huge savings, and what a lot of dealers did is kind of gone back to normal deals in January. You know, what we're doing at McConnell, Dalton, is we still have some 18 models left. I'm thinking, you know, things like Yukons, the Sierras, and that new bad boy 2019 truck, Dalton. We're getting truckloads of those. I want people to check that out. But it also creates an opportunity for huge discounts, because people can still get the 18 models, Dalton, at McConnell for over $12,000 off the sticker price. So I'm excited. We got about five Yukons left, about 30 trucks. So the closeout of the year sale is still happening at McConnell, and people are still saving huge money, Dalton, and we're having a lot of fun with it.
Oh, that's some great news. We appreciate it, Mitch. Have a good one.
Y'all have a great day, man.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go check out McConnell Automotive on McConnellAutomotive.com or see him in person, Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right, 836 FM Talk 106.5. By the way, a couple notes here. Number one, some commentary here on the Bezos divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we were talking about Bezos and the divorce settlement.
And it could be they could have to split the fortune, which means they would have to each get by on like $69 billion. Mm. And that's a big lifestyle change when you're living on $163 billion and you have to, or whatever, and then you have to go to like just $60-something billion. I don't know how you make ends meet, really, on $60
billion. Yeah, what are they going to do? I guess go to Dollar Tree, where they still keep their prices at a dollar.
It'll be tough.
It's going to be tough for them. But my mom, she was listening to us this morning, and she's wondering, you know, divorce papers have to be served.
Yeah.
She's wondering, how did they deliver Bezos's divorce papers? Did he get 2-day prime? Did he pay the extra $8 for overnight shipping? How did he get his divorce papers?
This is the best line of the day. I love it. I love it. I mean, you say, well, I can send those with Prime. I'm already a Prime customer.
So. And, you know, he could tell any delivery person, whether it's FedEx, UPS, post office. I would be very scared if I was McKenzie. Hopefully Bezos doesn't have any dirty tricks up his sleeves, but his ex-wife, he could ensure she never gets another delivery the rest of her life.
That's right. The drones will never come to her house. Okay, just a side note. I want to get into a couple other stories, because this does influence the market, right? There's people worried, and I read a lot of financial stuff and watch the dang financial channels and all that silly stuff. And they're all gunched up and worried that the divorce is going to influence the stock in the mm-hmm. company. How does that happen? Because I imagine you could say, okay, well, Bezos won't be on his game right now because he's... But they said they were already kind of separated anyway. And now, how does whether he's split with his wife and they both have to somehow patch their lives together on $69 billion each, you know, try to make ends meet, how does that influence the way Amazon delivers stuff?
Well,
I mean, if the stock price now, if the stock price drops, I'll see it as a buying opportunity, although I got to find $1,600 to do it. But I don't get, that's the disconnect that bothers me on Wall Street. One of the many is when they say something like that, that there's a divorce. Divorce proceedings don't change how right now, today, the company works.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, we've seen it with Elon Musk. We've seen it with Zuckerberg.
Right.
And
Elon
now
Musk
Bezos
is smoking weed, so they're saying, mm-hmm. but But the ideas that he had presented that made the company, they don't, one doesn't have to do with the other on that individual day.
Well, maybe people are worried about their mental state, and if they hold such an iron grip over each of their companies, and these companies are so vital to the stock market and the United States economy, whether they will go off the hook, you know, and start mm-hmm. doing stuff that isn't...
Have you ever seen anything from Bezos that would make you think he would do something
No, not at all. And also his votes, I guess, whenever the Amazon... 16% of the shares. So when they split their assets 50-50 mm-hmm. in Washington, will his wife have any part of Amazon? Will she be able to vote?
She may be able to, or will she dump a lot of stock to get cash, and will that run the price down? Now, that's fair. That's a fair analysis. That's a real-world analysis. But the idea that he's getting a divorce somehow will change the methodology of how they do business, I don't buy. Oh, of course, Wall Street will react to it mm-hmm. and have a big tantrum.
But also, I don't know how bitter she'll be from this divorce or how bitter he'll be. But if she does have any kind of control over what Amazon does, you'd think she would be smart. This is her meal ticket.
Yeah.
Let him continue to do what he's doing, and then she'll get money because of that.
Yeah, so I don't get how. But yeah, we'll see. Like I said, if it drops enough, it'll give regular folks like me maybe a chance to buy a share.
But do you think, you know, as Americans, and how big Apple and Amazon and some of these other companies, where they have their founders that are so big and so controlling over these companies, do you think that's a problem for America, for our economy, that if anything happens to these guys, if they, you know, start having mental issues and start doing mm-hmm. crazy things, that it could seriously affect. I mean, we saw what happened with Apple stock when it started falling and what that did to the stock market. You know, how does that affect us as Americans, I wonder, giving them so much control?
It depends on how their control is. Now, I would understand if you had a creative person in charge, all right? You can say that person is the innovator. And they're not going to innovate as much going forward. And that there might be a fair discussion there. But on a given day, when it's not, if it was an entertainer or something, then they are, entertainers and people like that are like professionals, like attorneys and physicians, right? They have to work to make money. Mm-hmm. They have to show up, they have to bill hours to make money. The entertainer has to be in a movie, do a show, do something, make money. When you come up with a concept and an idea, now, you do have to innovate, I agree, but when you come up with a concept and an idea, you do what Bezos has done or others, that's its own entity to its... you've created something that you don't, at day-to-day, have to do anything with. It doesn't run itself. There's a huge staff that runs it, but the concept is not you. The concept is something of its own, right? It's now... you've now had an idea...
Mm-hmm.
And that idea, you can sit back. If you come up with a concept like Amazon, if you're Bezos, honestly, you always have to innovate in business, because if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. I agree. But you can sit on a beach and drink a Mai Tai if you've started a business and your business is still doing what it was. It's making money. Versus if you're an attorney or a physician or an entertainer or something like that, you have to be there to, air quotes here, bill the hours.
Right. Yeah. I guess we've seen also in the past with America, whenever one of these companies starts slipping, there's always someone else that'll jump into that marketplace and take over that spot.
And, you know, and one of our friends was texting earlier today, and he said, Amazon's just the old Sears and Roebuck catalog. The only thing is you get it overnight instead of in 3 weeks. I would add to this and say, not completely. I get the analogy, but what Amazon did is they said, hey, we're not going to be in the business of, even though they've now moved into branding their own products, but we're going to sell everybody else's.
Yep.
If Sears and Roebuck back then would have sold everybody else's products through their catalog, but you could never, I mean, the catalog would have weighed 1,600 pounds.
Right.
But I mean, so they were selling their own stuff. Sears and Roebuck was doing that, but they weren't innovating and saying, we're going to make this a online marketplace and everybody's going to come to us to sell their products, even though they're not from our company. They're going to choose to come through us to sell.
And, you know, just as a side note on a personal level, we're talking about the richest man in the world, right? He's the richest man in the world. Yeah. And we like to think that when people make a lot of money and they're doing really well in life, that their life is perfect. well, this guy, the richest man in the world, clearly has his own issues in the family, because the rumor is out that he cheated on his wife, and that was the cause of this divorce. So nobody's life is perfect, and even if you're the richest man in the world, you're going to have some issues.
Well, now he's going to be in the poorhouse. He's only going to have $69 billion, how he will ever get through.
Poor guy.
All right, a couple other stories breaking this morning.
Yeah, so I saw John Sharp tweet something earlier this morning or late last night.
Breaking news here, y'all.
Breaking news. King Cake Snob. It's a website company out of New Orleans dedicated to, you know, you guessed it, King Cakes. And it's coming very close to their primetime season where everyone's ordering the King Cakes. So they have a Facebook page like so many other companies. And they published a post on January 7th. And the post said, "We're back, baby." And they put baby on there because they had the king cake babies. You know, the babies that you put in the king cake, whoever gets it has a lucky year. Well, you know, those babies are naked. They don't have clean. They don't have clothes.
Because they're babies.
That's exactly right. Facebook, who's taking care of everybody, making sure that we never see anything that that would, you know.
Y'all get ready. Sit down for this one. Get ready, y'all.
So they tried to advertise. They tried to pay for advertising through Facebook, where they promote your post so that more people can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook did not allow their post to be paid advertised for their website.
Why would Facebook not take the money to advertise these King Cake babies?
Well, they sent an email back to the company saying that their social media post was rejected because it included, quote, an image or video depicting excessive skin or nudity, which includes medical diagrams depicting external organs of reproduction, breasts, or butt. This kind of material is sensitive in nature.
Y'all, the bottom side of the King Cake baby, the plastic King Cake baby that we have all pulled out of cakes for our whole lives here along the Gulf Coast, got flagged on Facebook as nudity.
Not safe for work.
There's an algorithm that may need a little reworking. Hey, Zuckerberg, get to work. You'd be a break. All right, coming right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. By the way, I know I had the story earlier today where this psychologist said you should wait for March 4th to get started with your New Year's resolution. Well, you should be getting ready. Should be the pregame. Should be the preamble right now, getting set up. And then you really get after it come March 4th. So I guess you could wait till March 4th to do it. But if you're like the rest of us and you made that resolution back on New Year's Eve and you're living up to it now, you got to get with it. The 11th of January, 11 days in. And if that resolution, one of them, was to get organized around the house, get cleaned up around the house, well, here's how you do it. Deadlines work, by the way. If you haven't ever noticed, a deadline is a great, great motivator, whether it be schoolwork or business or anything. You set a date and you live up to it. And here's how you do this to help you get organized. You get my buddy Trey Bennett and his crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You get online or go to the phone, call them, set an appointment time. And that's what they do. They give you a specific day and a time. Actually, they kind of work it out with your schedule. And if you agree on a time and a date, then that is something concrete and a deadline that you need to identify the junk you're going to get rid of in your house so you can get organized. So you set that date. They come by. They get rid of the junk. They do it very quickly. They're extremely efficient. And then you're on your way to being organized and decluttered in 2019. You don't need to sit and watch a bunch of TV shows about it. You don't need to sit and watch read a bunch of blogs about it. You have 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out. They get rid of the junk, and then you get off on the right foot for 2019. Online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Get the junk gone and live up to your New Year's resolution. All right, we'll go to the phones at 343-0106, and John is in Mobile. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. All right, the psychiatrist says start March 4th.
Fourth. That's his new thing. He said because if you try to do it right away, you're going to fail. So you use this period of time to like get ready, set up the infrastructure for living up to your New Year's resolution. It sounds like poppycock to me.
Yep. Right?
Sounds like to me he's waiting till after Mardi Gras.
Smart man.
Nobody's going to accuse Zuckerberg and the people at Facebook of having a lot of common sense, which unfortunately in our world now, common sense is a superpower.
You know what? Algorithms don't have. That's the problem. If you live your whole, it's just like when you have zero tolerance policies at schools. That always worries me because that leaves out the gray area where most decisions are made. Same thing with their algorithm. If their algorithm is saying, "Hey, there's nudity there," and it turns out to be a king cake, baby, maybe you need to tweak the algorithm.
Yeah, but see, they don't know what a king cake is in Seattle.
That's true.
The other thing, I've got to go to Seattle in a couple of weeks on business, and I was checking some news sites out there, and I heard that apparently in the last couple of days there was this massive wreck out there. A bunch of high-dollar cars, Mercedes and Range Rovers and everything. And apparently it was in Jeff Bezos' front gate. I guess the divorce lawyers are trying to get...
I knew a joke was coming. I knew it was coming. How is he going to... This is... People are worried how this will affect Bezos. I mean, I don't know if it's Fox News Channel. I mean, Fox Business or maybe CNBC. One of them had one of the talking heads, and they said, well, we're worried about, you know, Bezos' state of mind if he's left with just half of his fortune. You know, for regular people, when we hear that they're trying to figure out how to live on $69 billion...
It's not like they're going to cut the plane in half.
That's right. How will you ever make ends meet?
Bezos, let me tell you, I've been married almost 33 years, and before I got married, my dad said, I'm going to take you lunch, I'm going to give you some advice. I'm like, okay, this was going to be great. You know, I was going to hear all this kind of stuff, and he says, once you get married, I said, okay, he said, you need to quit seeing other people. And I was kind of looking around like,
well, all right, Dad.
He goes, I said, that's it? He goes, your cousin didn't listen to you.
Good call, John. I appreciate that. It's just like for a lot of people, they'll say, well, they'll cut the stuff in half. It'll be tough for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when whoever it was on there going, we don't know about Bezos' state of mind after they have to cut the assets. I'm like, do you hear? I wanted to reach through the television and say, do you hear what you're saying?
Well, you know, maybe his marriage was already falling apart, or maybe he, you know, just had, maybe he went off on a lark. And if the rumors are true that he cheated on his wife with this other woman, but the richest man in the world, I don't think how could he possibly, if he wanted it, find true love, someone that just likes him for him? Because, I mean, there are some out there who are marrying because of money, and he's going to have to comb through all of those women if he does plan on getting married again or finding true love again. But, you know, maybe the richest man in the world doesn't need that.
Maybe he's not looking for true love.
No.
Have you seen that? Lauren Sanchez? Okay. all right. Hey, this just popped up, too. Pretty interesting. A buddy of mine over in Louisiana sent it to me. A story here. BP finds another billion barrels of oil off the coast of Louisiana.
Oh, man.
This just popped up. You know, we always wonder, are you at peak oil? Or are we at the... as of Tuesday, BP revealed that it had made a major oil discovery in the Gulf of Mexico, announced a discovery of 1 billion barrels of oil off the coast of Louisiana. The company announced the discovery of another 400 million barrels off the coast of New Orleans. British energy company has discovered 1 billion barrels of crude at an existing oil field in the Gulf of Mexico. BP also announced 2 new offshore oil discoveries and a major new investment in the nearby field. So if you were worried that they were about to tap out there, it looks like they got their work to do.
That is huge. And, you know, I was just reading this story the other day about out in Texas where the new method of fracking and how much more oil we're pulling out of the land in Texas and other parts of America, and how this could eventually completely turn the oil market on its head around the world, because America is able to produce so much of its own fuel now, but the refineries out in the coast, I guess, and I don't know a whole lot about this stuff, but they're not set up to refine the type of oil that we're getting from Texas.
They'll call it dirtier oil, and they have more impurities to get out of it. But I mean, if that's what you have, then you reset the refineries to do it. I want to point out, too, that this will resonate with a few people out there that do some offshore fishing. This announcement from BP, they said the billion-barrel discovery is at Thunder Horse. So those who offshore fish, you fish the Thunder Horse rig, that floater, that's where they said they found another billion barrels. It amazes me how they can define it. I know the seismographic work, but it's just how you know that seismographically this, and you go, that equals, there's a billion barrels right there by what you did seismographically.
I'm guessing whoever's smart enough to put those analytics together and estimate closely how much oil's there, I'm guessing they get paid a pretty good amount of money.
They should. So that's significant. All right, we're wrapping it up for this week for Mobile Mornings. Be back on Monday with the show, but Dalton and I will be back today for Midday Mobile. 6.5 stories on the way.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, I'm pushing one story right now from the Consumer Electronics Show. You know, the Consumer Electronics Show going on out in Vegas. And some of the products that are being displayed, some that have been banned.
Mm-hmm.
They're of one ilk, and we'll kind of, if Dalton will do it, we'll lay that story out.
Yeah, some of those products I don't think would be allowed on Facebook the story we just had.
Well put. Things that would not be allowed on Facebook that are showing up in a new robotic form out at Consumer Electronics Show. All right, on the way, Mike Gallagher. We'll see y'all at noon for Midday Mobile.